You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today's Monday. It is, what month is it? It's April. It's April 17th. 2017. My name is Rob. Unfortunately, Jason couldn't make it tonight, so instead, we've got Jason's evil twin here. Jason's evil twin. I forget your name, sir. What is your name?
Wouldn't my name not just be Jason? I'm not.
Will you tell me you're the evil twin? I don't know.
Honestly, the problem with that, Rob, is as soon as you said that, all I could think about was what would my facial hair look like, because it was in Star Trek, the evil twin has the goatee. But if you already have the beard...
Well, you are clean shaven.
Right. That would make sense. Yeah.
Part of the evil nature of you is that you're clean shaven.
That is evil, by the way.
Yeah. Tell us how you've been. I didn't even know that Jason had a brother, much less an evil twin.
He tries to keep me down, the more successful brother. You know, that's basically.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't. He's in the spotlight, and I'm behind the scenes.
Uh-huh.
I'm the evil twin, so I probably live in Ohio,
Southern Ohio.
Yeah, Southern Ohio.
Right.
Yeah.
But I hear that you recently got back from a trip to the Philippines.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. That was a trip. Yeah.
Now
I'm here, back from the Philippines.
A tour of all Southeast Asia in general, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, that's where
it was the last stop, is my understanding.
And it makes sense, uh-huh. Right? Yeah. Why would I have been anywhere near here for the last 250-some episodes?
Uh-huh.
Basically, yeah. World traveler. Lesser-known brother, but world traveler, mm-hmm. So...
I'm curious. I don't mean to turn this into an interview or anything,
see, right,
but,
right.
You know, I'm curious. I not knowing that you existed before now, what's it like being evil?
You know, it's freedom, basically,
uh-huh.
Right? It's freedom to do whatever you want, mm-hmm. until you're caught.
Okay.
And then it's less freedom.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, for instance, I could just break into Jason's house and we can record here as long as no one's home. Then no one will know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I have a key somewhere, so you don't have to break in.
There's that. I should probably not have broken that window then, is what you're saying?
Well, you know. So give me... I want to understand the level of evil that we're dealing with. Like, are we talking about, like, just not recycling kind of evil? Or are we talking about, like, destabilizing governments kind of evil? Or where are you on that spectrum?
You know, destabilizing governments sounds like a lot of work,
uh-huh.
Right? I think I would fall more in the category of, like, you know, evil, but not trying too hard, right?
Uh-huh.
It's just kind of this evil sense of being, right? Uh-huh. You know, I just kind of am... general sense of evil.
Okay.
You know, just kind of exudes, uh-huh. off me. Probably.
Right.
It's, you know, that's what happens.
Sure. You don't tip well?
Oh, no, never. Why would you tip?
No.
I don't ever tip because I don't care about waiters or waitresses.
No.
Well,
I mean, like 10%, right? Not 20 is what you mean.
Oh, no. I actually take off 20%.
Oh, my goodness.
Give myself a discount.
Wow.
So, you know.
Wow.
That's the pleasure they get for serving me, basically,
uh-huh.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. It works in reverse.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, going like 10 over instead of 5 over on the speed limit, that kind of thing. Most people go about 5. Between 5. You tell me, because you're the evil one here.
Well, Jason would tell you he probably goes 7 to 9 on the highway,
because
it's probably safe. But but myself, I would be a standard 12.
Mm-hmm.
12 over, 12. Maybe 12.5.
Huh.
You don't want to push it too far. 13 is unlucky.
You don't want to draw attention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, but, you know, my car sometimes draws attention, so.
Mm-hmm. What do you drive?
Well, like Jason, it's an Xterra, but mine is yellow.
Oh, the color of evil.
Yeah, well, and it's got flames on it. So,
yeah, oh.
I mean.
Actually, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Wait, are you the cool twin instead of the evil twin? Maybe.
Is that not the same thing?
Oh, you're right. That's an excellent point.
I feel like that's the same thing.
That might be the same thing. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't design games. I don't build games. I break games.
You break them.
sometimes over people's heads when I'm playing with them. Wow. Right? Just pick that Monopoly box up and smash it over someone's head.
You are cool.
Yeah. You can hear children crying in the background. That's how evil I am.
Wow. Wow.
Hopefully that doesn't mean Jason. So
they're crying because their real dad is just such a boring loser.
I mean, they wish he was just more evil
and cool.
Yeah,
which is basically the same thing. That's what we've learned today.
Yeah, yeah, kids, evil and cool, same thing.
Okay, well, evil Jason, have you what have you been up to apart from your trip to Southeast Asia and you're speeding,
right? And just spreading doom and gloom everywhere. Yeah. You know, not a lot of games played. Oh, I played Splendor recently.
Did you? Oh. Wow.
Which we play a lot. Uh-huh. Well, Jason does, but, you know, I play it sometimes. I'm much better than he is at it. But see children in the background just crying. Mm-hmm. Just crying. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
Evil.
I can hear it.
Well, I know you can hear it.
Right.
Also played Mr. Jack.
Mr. You know, Jack.
And Jason always wants to be the, he's like, I'm going to be the investigators. And
right.
I'm like, poof. You like to be Jack.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Get away with it.
Sure.
I usually lose, though, so it's okay. So
it's tough.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, good. That's good.
Have you been playing anything?
No, not really. Been busy with life and nonsense and garbage. So no, I haven't really had a lot of chance to play much at all. I more Gems of War on my phone. You know, I spent a lot of time
playing Gems of War.
And I started playing Type Shift. Have you heard of this one?
No. What is that?
Type Shift. It's a word game. It's pretty cool. You basically, here, I'll show you on my phone. It'll be difficult to describe to builders, but
builders, I bet you have a computer
right
with Google.
So I think, I don't know if it's on Android or not, but you have like a set of vertical columns with letters in them and you slide them up and down and then there's kind of an active row. And then you want to basically make words out of
you
the letters.
You made the word virus.
I did. By
which
sliding,
I'm a big fan of.
Sure. Being evil.
Exactly.
So you need to slide these things around. Oh, the dog's barking at you too.
Yep.
You slide these things around until you make all the letters. You use all the letters to create words, and then that's the end of that puzzle.
Oh wait, so now you just lost those letters that you used?
Well, I can still use those letters to make other words.
Oh, but they light up. I see.
So that I know I've already used. I don't have to use that one to finish the puzzle, but I can keep using them if I want to.
Right.
Yeah. So it's pretty neat. It's a nice little simple time waster.
Type Shift. It's called.
It's called Type Shift. Yeah.
Like
it's free, and you get a free daily puzzle, but you can also buy packs for like 99 cents of new stuff to do. So whatever, it's neat. I'm enjoying it here and there. I haven't spent any money on it yet, but I probably will. I got a plane trip coming up,
right?
So I'll probably buy a few of those packs. We'll see how that goes,
right?
But no tabletop games at all. I did spend a little time working on Simple Surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
It is. It's good. Yeah. So I've got a plan for that. I don't know that I've shared this on the show. Have I? My kind of firmed up plan?
I don't think so.
No. So I will go ahead and do that. After playing with some folks at Unpub and talking about it a lot with Mr. Loomis, Commander Loomis, I gave him that title just now because I think it fits him. And Commander Loomis and I talked about it at length, and I got home and thought a lot about it. And so the structure I've got for that game right now is that I've got 12 different challenges, and those challenges tell you how many cards of what colors you have to pull out of the stack, and it tells you so it's basically that how many you have to pull and what colors they are, and then you have 30 seconds to do that.
So there is still a timer. Wow,
yeah.
30 seconds.
30 seconds to
wow.
do that. Right. And then based on how difficult it is, how many cards you need to pull out, you get more points for it. And so, there are 48 cards. So 12 of the same puzzles, in one in each of four colors in the card backs. Okay. So you shuffle that deck up, then you deal out three face up so you can see the challenge face up on the table, and put the rest of the stack face down, and then put the top card of the patient card on top of that. Okay. And then you're gonna turn the deck so that it's kind of messy, so you can see there are corners and things sticking out, and you can hopefully, without poking around too much, you can see what color the card backs are. Okay, and then the first player to go has to pick one of those three challenges that are face up, and say I'm gonna try to accomplish this one. All right.
Okay.
And then they take that card and they put it in front of them, and then someone flips over the sand timer and says go, and they have to use tweezers, and they have to complete that challenge within 30 seconds. If they fail to complete in 30 seconds, or they knock the cards over, either way, so if they fail, they're done, and that challenge they try to complete goes back to the open area. If they complete the challenge and they keep that card for points, and whatever card they just pulled out now goes out there to be one of the new challenges.
That makes sense.
And if the challenge meant that they had to pull out, say, three cards, then they look at those three that they pulled out and they choose which one is going to be the new challenge.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So just some simple stuff to make sure there's always options out there. And if you want to play with four challenges out there or five challenges out there, go ahead. It's not the end of the world, right? You know, no big deal. But yeah, that's the idea for that structure. So I put together some real basic, simple card art, because one of the downsides of this game is that I have to test it with real cards so that it feels right.
Mm-hmm.
So I put together some real basic card art to order from GameCrafter so I can get a better quality trial deck.
Right.
And then instead of the actual challenges on the card faces, I'm numbering them 1 through 12. And then I can have a cross-reference sheet next to that and say that number one equals this challenge, number two equals that. And then I can change the challenges and adjust without needing to order a whole new proto. So
that's smart.
That's my plan for that one.
Have you considered removing the tweezers and instead using a knife and stabbing the deck?
Oh, that would be
until
evil,
you stab the deck,
uh-huh,
and then you look, the card that's on the bottom should be the card you're looking for.
It's like
evil magicians.
Can you stab your opponents also?
I preferably in the back, but that's how I would do it. Replay value on that game goes down, right? Because dead opponents, and you ruin the deck.
Most of the time. That's the main concern, right?
But I would say that's probably a healthier option than the normal, you know, finger stab game.
I don't know the finger stab. Oh, you mean when you put your hand out and then you run the knife point between your fingers at high speed?
I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but in the end, it's the finger stab game. Trust me.
Well, it's about not stabbing your fingers.
But trust me, somebody always stabs their finger.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why you're doing it, right?
Right. It's like Russian roulette, except for it's guaranteed that, you know,
at some point you're gonna stab a finger.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
It's really just the "I hope I don't cut off the finger when I stab it" game.
Uh-huh.
Basically.
Right. A friend of ours tweeted something. Neil Roberts tweeted something. And do you have the tweet there handy?
I don't, because he didn't tweet it. He actually said it to me on Google, but I think I can pull that up.
Hmm.
Yes. I sent him a message because he's not always on Twitter.
Okay.
He said, "I get that Kickstarter board game vids should focus on the story of the game. I just want one sentence where you tell me what makes your game special." He said, "I always hear things like, why aren't people backing this, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to be like, because I have no idea what makes this special." And he said, "I want to differentiate that what makes it special is different than the hook. The hook is what gets your attention. What really makes your game special could be entwined with the hook, but it's not necessarily the hook."
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's, I think that was a really good question.
I thought so too. Very well thought out.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. And let's talk about understanding what makes your game special and keeping that in mind when you're talking to people about it. That it takes me back to, I was a big fan of role-playing public radio.
Yes.
When I had more time in my day to listen to podcasts and things. And they did an episode a long time ago about a sense of wonder. And their point was when you're creating a world for your role-playing game or an adventure for your players or whatever that situation may be, keep in mind that this is supposed to be fantasy and this is fun. Even if it's not a fantasy themed game that you're playing or something, you know, keep in mind though that this is about having a good time. This is supposed to make players feel excited and feel surprise and so putting some kind of sense of wonder into your game is important and really will help people engage with it and get excited about it. So that's kind of not too far off from what we're talking about here, right? You know,
For sure.
Right. What makes your game special? Understand what makes your game special and tell people what makes your game special. So, let's start here. when do you know what makes your game special? Like it, well, I don't know if you have thought on that, or maybe if you want to talk in terms of real estate.
You know, that's I want to say somebody who I think really puts this succinctly, with probably not even realizing what they're saying about it, because and this isn't not a dig on them, surprisingly, but I'm talking about Josh Mills. But in the episode that I wasn't on, that he was on, you guys talked about designing a hotel game, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing he said was, I want the keys, right? I want the old school hotel with the key rack, right?
Yeah,
that's what my vision is for this game. And that's, you know, that is, boom, that's what I get out of this, right? And then, yeah. And then he goes on to say, and you guys kind of moved away from it, but he said, you know, that's how I design. That's usually how I design, right?
Yeah.
I have a thing, like, you know, Masters of Sound, the game he has, that was... He's got the record, right? I'm going to make a record.
Mm-hmm.
How can I make a record? Make a record, right? Make a record while making a record. Yeah. But anyways, so that to me, you know, that, well, that sometimes could, again, be the same as the hook, right? Or entwined with it. That to me is, that's his sense of wonder with it, right? Like it, boom, it grabs him and pulls him in. And when I heard that as a game player, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I heard him say that, I immediately wanted to play that game.
Sure.
That immediately evoked images. And you guys kind of got away from that. And
we did.
It was too, like I hope he works on that game, because that sounds awesome, right? Like, not the game you guys actually designed, because that was kind of weird. But like the idea of like...
Oh, by the way, Katashi's going to publish that.
Yeah
it's done. I mean, right. It's
done.
Coming up next from Green Couch Games.
Right. But no, right? The idea of that just sounds really cool. And so that, when I heard that, I thought that's a cool way to design things.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that sometimes with games. The thing with Unreal Estate, though, what got me with Unreal Estate was the way the drafting mechanic worked.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, that actually was based on a theme that went away.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... So when I think about trying to apply that question or answer that question around As Autumn Leaves, okay, what makes that game special? So in my mind, the art will make it special. What I imagine the art to be, of course.
Which one of the things I would obviously say about Unreal Estate, right?
Yeah.
Is that the art makes it stand
out. Sure, absolutely. But separate from that, because that, of course, doesn't exist yet, what makes that special is that kind of, is hopefully that sort of Zen feeling that... That kind of meditative or calming feeling of trying to put together your forest or put together your tree branches. I think we talked before about it's going to be about trees and not leaves,
right?
But at any rate, so about kind of assembling your forest and ushering it through the changing season, that sense of that. Is kind of what I hope to get from Autumn Leaves. And I think what I hope will make it special. So we've talked about art being special. We've talked about that feeling of the game being special. And we've talked about, you know, that one central inspirational image being special. Well, what are other things that designers can think of and can connect with to identify what something special.
So what can, I mean, I think that I feel like, gosh, this is very hard to quantify, right? Like
it's
in
tough.
A real, you know, the first thing I guess that popped in my head was, you know, the way you have the players interact with the mechanics of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That to me can be done in so many different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even with the same mechanics, just the way you interact with them can feel very different, right? Which can take a very boring game to a very fun game just by tweaking kind of the vantage point the player has, the view that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, there was somebody just talking about that recently. Sakatsu. I so all I know is you love the game. That's literally all I know about it. And then I think it's coming out at Gen Con.
Oh, is it?
I saw that on Twitter. So if that's the case, I'm all over buying that.
Yeah.
But I guess that, and you would know this from playing it, but your view, the way you score changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way the different things line up.
Yeah.
Right? And I would argue that to me, that's really cool, right?
Yeah.
That makes me excited about the game. The numbers stuff or whatever, is it numbers you're putting out or is it like pictures or something? Like, I mean, that I haven't seen that, but like,
sure.
When you described it, I thought, I'm sure it's really cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when I heard that, mm-hmm. like immediately I was like, oh wow, that's clever.
Mm-hmm.
That's clever.
Yeah. 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 The when you're placing tiles on a game, you're placing tiles with score right now, but it's almost more important that you're thinking for the from turn one, you should be thinking about scoring at the end of the game and not just about what you're doing right now.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to think kind of three dimensionally in a way. All right, well, you're thinking two dimensionally, but the third dimension then is time, I guess, in that case.
I mean, the problem is you're probably not thinking fourth dimensionally.
Yeah, yeah.
The bridge will be there when you go into the future.
Right.
So, yeah. But, right.
Yeah. If you have to think about it from two different perspectives is what that's where I was going with that.
Right.
Right.
You know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, thinking more about Unreal Estate, you know, that game was a fun game. Like, it was like, hey, this is a fun little filler game.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it was Mark's theme and the art from Corinne that mm-hmm. completely made that game special, right? Otherwise, mm-hmm. it was just a filler game that mm-hmm. probably would have just done okay on Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
but suddenly did very well.
Sure.
Because that made it special.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes me think of, we also got a tweet from AJ asking us to talk about emotion and an emotional connection to a game. And I think that's what a lot of people did, is they saw that art and they saw that
yes.
theme and they felt like an immediate connection.
Right.
Emotional. Right. And that's, you know, art goes a long way for that. But, you know, you also hope that you at least want to make sure the mechanics don't distract from that, right? Or don't
right.
get in the way of that emotional
connection. In best case, they should support it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Unreal Estate, the idea that you're trying to build the most unique buildings.
Yeah.
So, therefore, the more times a building ends up in the scrap pile,
mm-hmm.
the more you end up with it,
yeah.
You end up scoring for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, that theme is justified by the mechanics justify the theme, mm-hmm. sorry. Which just reinforces that feeling, mm-hmm. right? And sure, it's not a game where you're going to put a lot of emotion into, right? But mm-hmm. that artwork does help draw you in. Because with little filler games, obviously, pulling someone in emotionally can be very difficult.
Sure.
Right? Because it's a filler game. It's a little filler game.
Mm-hmm.
Other than providing those aha moments, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, making something special. So, you know, telling people how to make something special, that's hard, but... So then the advice becomes try to think about, for a designer, try to think about what makes this thing you're working on special. And if you can't put your finger on what makes the game special and what would make it special to a player, then maybe you need to, I'm not going to say maybe you should stop working on the game, but I'm going to say, you should make sure you know what that is before you pitch it to a publisher, I think.
Yep. I think one good way to help find that out, though, is get it in front of players.
Sure.
And when somebody has a positive reaction, mm-hmm. the negative reaction, just get feedback. But when they have a positive reaction
mm-hmm.
and they really like it and they want to champion your game and you're like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you love this game so much?
Mm-hmm.
Ask them that. Figure out what, you know, say to them, what makes this game so special to you? Why do you care about this?
Sure.
And from there... you may get the answer for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Because as the designer, it can be difficult to see, mm-hmm. right? It's not always the easiest to just be like, oh, what makes my game special? You know, yeah. Gosh, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a really good question to ask a playtester. Is there anything that you feel like makes this game special?
Yeah, stands out from others.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there, and that actually could be a really powerful question at Unpub. So, because some of those folks are going to play a dozen games over the course of a day or two.
Right.
And you could say, is there anything that makes this game stand out from what you've played?
Gosh, you know what that, oh man, that is something that, oh, that what a stupid question to not have ever asked.
Yeah.
Why did you sit down here? There's
yeah.
a thousand tables here.
Right.
Why did you sit down at my table?
Right.
Like right when they sit down, first question.
Sure.
Hey, how you doing? Why are you going to play my game? What got you to come here?
Yeah.
Like, assuming that I didn't, like, draft you to come in and you felt
right.
pressured. Like,
yeah.
you purposely walked over, saw my game. What makes you want to play this game?
Is it just because the chair was empty and you
right.
looked like I was available, or was
right.
there something else?
Because sometimes I'll see people come over with books and be like, oh, I was looking for this game. And other times I know they just look at my little sign and they think, oh, that sounds interesting, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I put silly art and stuff on my signs, sure. Because I'm just trying to get people's attention.
Sure, right. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question to ask playtesters.
Well, hey, we've made one discovery that's probably useful.
Sure. That's more than we usually accomplish. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll pitch a game now, eh?
Sounds great.
Okay. I can pull up my notes. So, Evil Jason, I've had this idea in my head for a couple of years now.
That's concerning. Just thinking about it bouncing around in there.
Yeah, echoing chamber, you know. there's not much in my
Have
skull.
You ever told Jason about this game?
I don't believe so.
Oh.
No.
Even better. Well, he'll never know now.
Well, not in the historical context, the fact that I've been trying to think about doing this for a long time, but I did mention a basic approach to the idea to normal Jason. I'm not going to say good Jason. I'm going to say normal
Jason.
He
probably wasn't listening.
Yeah, fair. Normal Jason, I talked to a couple of weeks ago about this basic idea, but I fleshed it out since then.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'll still be surprised, so...
So I've liked this idea for a while of a clock face, and of cards in a circle shaped like a clock face, mm-hmm. and using two cards as clock hands that you can move around the clock face.
Okay.
And based on what number the hands are pointing to, there's some action or condition of some kind. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what to do with it for a long time.
Right.
So I recently had a couple of, one of the things that Normal Jason and I both do this, where we will just put something into a Google Doc and we'll just leave it there and we'll come back to it now and then.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
This is one of those times where I came back to it and I thought, oh, maybe I finally have a thought here. So the game is called Clockwork Kingdom. My original thought was Clockwork Monarch, but I'm not sure that the alliteration there quite works. So I was hoping for the ah sounds, Clockwork Monarch, but I'm not sure if it sounds as good as the hard K is the Clockwork Kingdom. Anyway, whatever. So Clockwork Kingdom is what I'm calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the thematic setup is that all of the players are lords and ladies. In the Clockwork Kingdom, and the Clockwork Kingdom is a clockwork kingdom. All of the inhabitants are mechanical beings that need to be wound up every morning, or otherwise they'll run out of.
Who winds them up?
Actually, the mechanic is responsible for winding up the rich and the powerful. Hopefully, the peasants and the poor are winding each other up. Otherwise, you might just come across a wound down person in an alley somewhere.
So. Is that where baby clocks come from? They're winding each other up all the time.
Well, I think baby clocks are assembled from sprockets and gears and things.
Okay. Right.
So
don't ever think winding each other up all the time.
Don't ever think it. So everybody is some kind of a clockwork being of some kind, clockwork people. And recently the king wound down and his spring broke and he could not be rewound up. Okay, so he was damaged beyond repair, and now there's a vacancy on the throne.
Was it an assassination?
Well, I don't know.
It'd be cooler if it was an assassination.
Well, there is some political intrigue here. But we want to be chosen as the new monarch. Okay,
mm-hmm.
For the Clockwork Kingdom. So I'll give you a kind of a setup. There's a game board. Okay, and the game board is there. For organizational purposes and for tracking some statistics and things.
Mm-hmm.
In the center of the game board, there are spaces for 12 cards arranged in a circle, and they are numbered like a clock face, but the number doesn't necessarily matter a whole lot. They're there to help you just know where to put cards. And then there are two additional cards that are a minute hand or an hour hand. Okay, and those are placed. It's initial game setup, you're going to have it pointed to 12 o'clock. Then you have a deck of action cards. At the start of the game, oh, and then you've got also four standard action cards, okay? So at the start of the game, you set the four standard action cards at the cardinal directions or the cardinal points, say 12, 3, 6, and 9 on the clock, okay? You shuffle up the action card deck, and then you deal out cards from the action card deck to fill the remaining spaces on the clock face, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you put the two hand cards pointing to 12 o'clock. All right. Then we've also got 12 character cards. Okay, the 12 characters are the, you know, the lords and ladies of the kingdom, folks like the guard captain, you know, the leader of the church, the fool, the saboteur, the noble lord and lady, the merchant, the judge, the treasurer, the architect, the royal mechanic, and you know, the peasant leader or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, those are very just kind of general archetypes. Details to be fleshed
out. Sounds like it.
So those characters then are laid out also on the game board, and they're probably not actual cards. They're probably like tiles. Every one of those characters has a love thing and a hate thing. Okay, something that they love and something that they hate, and a thing that they prefer. Okay, whether some characters prefer love and other players prefer hate.
I can relate.
Sure. So okay. Every player then is also going to have a hand of five cards. You can take five of these action cards. And then we've got a deck of tasks that are off to the side. And those are shuffled up, and we put out four task cards face up. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, on your turn. Oh, so the last piece here is that the hand cards have a clockwise side and a counterclockwise side. Okay? And when you are laying the cards out, the hand cards out, they always have to be opposite. So one is always going to be moving clockwise around the face. The other one is going to be moving counterclockwise around the face. Okay? You with me still?
I think so.
Okay. All right. So
just trying to focus on the counterclockwise and clockwise.
Right. And I mean, they'll have arrows on them, so you know which way to...
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. So you don't have to remember that.
Right.
It should be printed right on there. Okay. So on your turn, here's the basic structure of this game here. So on your turn, you are going to... and I didn't talk about... the tracking other information. So there are three other, I'll call them meters or tracks, if you want, that represent kind of a pendulum swing, like a clock. Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So there's one... let me make sure I check my notes here.
Pendulum should probably have a big axe on the end.
It could. Actually, it could. One of them is... swings between charity and corruption. The other one swings between justice and anarchy. Okay? Mm. All right. And then you have a general love and hate pendulum. Okay? Or call it good and evil, whatever you want to do. All right? And these are going to track both the your actions and which way you are leaning, which way your pendulum is swinging, your personal one, and also which way the pendulum of the kingdom is swinging. Okay.
Do the people's pendulums affect the kingdom, or no? Is that independent?
Yeah. So you can affect all of these things.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right. So on your turn, start your turn. The first thing you can do is you can take an action on the clock face. All right. And by taking an action, what you're going to do is you can either flip over both hand cards, so you can change the direction of their movement. Okay, so if the minute hand is going clockwise and the hour hand is going counterclockwise, you can flip them both so that they start going the opposite directions. Or you can take one of the two hand cards and rotate it 180 degrees. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do one of those two actions, and then the clock hands are both going to move one space.
Okay.
Okay?
I have my eyes closed. I'm visualizing.
Sure, that's fine. So. And then whatever cards the hands point to after they move are actions that you can take on your turn. Okay.
Yep, that makes sense.
If it's one of the four standards that are out there all the time, you can just go ahead and take that action right away. Done. Okay. If it's pointing to one of the other action cards, in those four cardinal direction ones, those stay there permanently. If it's a different action card, you take that action card and then that goes to a discard pile.
And then you replace it with one from your hand?
Yeah, at the end of your turn. Right. Okay. So, okay. Now, what you're doing here, Okay. So you're going to take those actions, and those actions are going to be things like they're going to earn you more gold. They're going to allow you to get an influence cube potentially. Let you draw cards, let you do some kind of something with a task, with one of those task cards out there on the table. Okay. Task cards. So after you do those actions, then you can have an opportunity to resolve a task card out there. And that might require influence cube, spending influence to get something. And those tasks could be anywhere from, you know, building a bridge to bribing an official to sending soldiers off to war. I don't know, because it's all kinds of different things to do with the kingdom. You might spend gold to get things done, whatever. And then when you complete a task, that gives you, tells you how to move one of your markers on one of those pendulums. Okay. Probably it's going to be on the charity, corruption pendulum, or on the justice or anarchy pendulum. Okay. You're going to swing one way or the other. You're going to move, you know, start at kind of a null point on both of those, and you're going to move back and forth on one direction. Okay.
Kind of like you're building your character almost. Yeah,
exactly. Or you can take an influence cube that you're going to earn through some of those things, and you can place it on the good or evil pendulum. Okay. One side or the other. Okay. And that's not necessarily sliding back and forth. That's a pool. You're either on the goods pool or the evil pool. Okay. All right. Now, I talked about those characters having preferences.
You did.
The game only lasts for a certain number of turns, and I think it's a total of 12 turns, 12 numbers on the clock.
You might as well go with the 12 theme.
Right. Stick with it. Okay. So at the end of 12 turns, so we need a turn count or two. So at the end of 12 turns, we go through all 12 of those characters in order one at a time, and we identify if anybody meets their love or their hate criteria. And if only one of those two criteria is achieved, then the player that achieves that criteria claims that character. But if both love and hate are achieved, then it's whichever one that character prefers gets the points for that character. Okay,
that makes sense,
right? And you just go on down the line and assign out the characters either way. Oh, and I'm sorry, some of those task cards or action cards might also get you victory points as you're going.
So you don't get those characters till the end, though?
You don't get them till the end.
Okay,
right,
just to clarify, I understand, right? That
okay. You know, and then some characters identify more with love, some characters identify more with hate. Also, as you complete task cards, you take that task card to your play area, and all task cards also have a love or a hate or a good or evil trait or tendency on them. And at the end of the game, though, so you collect all that stuff, and then you look at the good and evil pendulum. Okay, and if the let me make sure I say this correctly because I have notes here. If there are more influence cards on the good side, where are we here? So whichever side is heavier at the end, right? Be it good or evil. The tasks that you've completed that match that characteristic are worth minus one victory point for each one, but the characters that align with that are worth plus one victory point for each.
Okay.
Okay. And, you know, and vice versa. Okay. So it's about you're trying to affect the outcome of the kingdom. You're trying to push the direction of this entire people and this entire land in the way that you want to influence the nobles to vote for you. But but you need the support of the nobles, but you also need the support of the people through acting on the kingdom itself.
Right.
To achieve support for the general population.
That makes
sense. And then in the end, whoever has the most victory points is elected the king of the kingdom. It's kind of a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. And it's still a little fuzzy in my head right now.
I mean, that makes sense. It's kind of fuzzy to me too. But
yeah.
What I understood sounds interesting.
Uh-huh.
And sounds like it could be worth a prototype.
Yeah, it's a lot, and there's a lot of task cards that have to be written. There's a lot of work that has to go into, assigning the positives and negatives for each of those characters, you know, and what their preferences are. A whole heck of a lot of balancing to look at. Action cards, I don't even know really where to begin with action cards, and what different kinds of actions to go in there.
That's always really difficult to figure out what kind of actions to add to the game.
Yeah, right. So. You know, and I think those standard actions are things like, you know, earn two gold, or take one influence cube, or whatever, draw two cards. I don't know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, So kind of complicated, a lot going on there in that initial pitch that is fuzzy. But I like that clock theme and that kind of time theme a lot. I think
Kingdom is good for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I wanted it to be about, you know, not just influencing the nobles or, you know, the big people. I wanted it to also be about, also working within the city and working with other people in the city, you know?
Right.
And I like that pendulum concept too. The pendulum, the time swinging back and forth in a clock. And I felt like that should be meaningful as well. And which way that pendulum has swung by the end of the game should be really meaningful. Another thought I had is that as you're adding cubes to the different sides, to the good or bad side of the pendulum for the tenor of the whole city, the whole kingdom, maybe those should be dropped into blind boxes that you can't see. So you don't know. You can count if you want to, but it's easy to lose track of how many cubes have gone into either side.
I think that makes sense. You could also do that with just tokens that are the same on each side. Oh, wait, no, because... Well, then it would just be you'd put them all on the pendulum in the middle,
mm-hmm.
face down, and at the end of the game, you could flip them over to reveal what was what.
Yeah, I suppose.
Be a cheaper option
than I suppose, yeah.
the boxes. But the boxes would be kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could even envision like a single box that has a divider down the center and two slots on the top, and that might look like a clock face or, you know, or something yeah. like that, because publishers like 3D stuff sometimes.
They do.
You know? So, yeah, Clockwork Kingdom is kind of that idea. It's a big game.
Yeah, sounds like it's a big game.
There's a lot of stuff there and a lot of keeping track of stuff.
But it does sound like it could be worthwhile.
Yeah.
Have you considered that really if you're trying to become the leader of the clocks and you get stopped,
mm-hmm.
perhaps you could call the game Clock Blocked.
That's...
Clock Blockers. Clock Blocking. No? Something like that. I don't know. It just has a ring to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Clockwork Kingdom is pretty good too.
Yeah, it's I'm liking
that's
that.
Good. Yeah,
I'm liking that name. The original idea here is I started thinking about that the way the hands move, you know, and they're going to move in opposite directions, but you can choose which way they're going to go, or you can turn around 180 degrees. And I was thinking about that as kind of like a kind of a puzzly thing where you're an assassin. I was thinking as the Clockwork Assassin, and it's a solo game where you're. You know, you have to, you pick one character that you have to assassinate, and you need to be rotating those hands around until they both point to the same card at the same time. And you have to do that within a certain number of turns.
And that was a solo game.
Imagine it was a solo game, right? And you're starting, you know, you'd shuffle those cards up and you'd flip one over and you go, okay, that's the guy that I've got to kill. And they go at the 12 o'clock position. You put the rest around there and then you would set the hands at whatever the time is right now. You know, and
so basically, if you wanted to win that game, just always play at noon or midnight and done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but that's not as much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you like to win easy, which I do.
Well, if that's the case, then you put the target at 6 o'clock. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So anyway, maybe that's a solo variant of the game when it gets Kickstarter.
Yes. Next month.
Yeah, I got a lot of work to do if it's going to be next month.
Better get going.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Clockwork Kingdom. That's the idea.
I like it.
Okay. We have some voicemails.
Yeah. We're going to listen to a couple here.
Okay.
First, what's going on? Jason, in episode 252, you gave some words of wisdom, which is to stay positive. And I would like to expand on that and just say, act like a proton. Stay positive.
Act like a proton.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, Jason loves that. I prefer electrons.
Neutrons? Oh, well, no. Okay.
Neutrons. Those are in the middle.
Act like a neutron. Stay positive. All right.
Yeah. All right. So.
Jeez.
All right. Up next from P. Genie Rexburg.
Driving around listening to episode 250 something, you and Rob are currently arguing about new mechanics, which was a topic sent in by a listener that looks like Rob or doesn't look like Rob, depending on who you're talking to. Anyways, you mentioned deck building being a new mechanic, and I say false, sir, or gentlemen, false. Because Magic Gathering and all CCGs had deck building in it. Now, what Donald X did was distill a game based on just the deck building aspect of it, right? But deck building wasn't a new mechanic. It was a mechanic that was needed in all CCGs. He just made it the focus, and then people started using it. So his game drove people to coin the phrase, but not necessarily create the mechanic. And I think that can happen in a lot of different areas where people, someone comes with a neat mechanic. I don't think most mechanics are unique. They're a genesis of something else and just a distillation or, now I'm just rambling. All right, talk to you later, bye.
Fair point.
So you heard it here first.
Yeah.
Whoever it was that came up with deck building really didn't invent anything. They just basically took something else that already existed and used it. So whoever out there, if you're listening, if you feel like you're the father of deck building, Lenier Wexford challenges you to a duel.
Wow, I didn't realize that the gauntlet had been thrown down like that. That's wow.
I don't know that it has, but I don't want to speak for Len, but he said you didn't invent crap.
Hi, guys. This is Mikey. Pretty new listener. I'm about maybe 30 episodes in. So you might have talked about this already, but this is what I've been thinking about Kickstarter. So I don't know why Kickstarter or some other website doesn't create a model where you can offer a product at a certain price and people sign up, but the more people who sign up, the cheaper the price for them gets. This would make sense because this is the way production works, right? Like any game printing you're doing, you know, the price goes down the more copies you get made. So they should just make a Kickstarter model that does that math for you. Because right now it seems like the way everything is done is with the stretch goals, you add things to the game. But what that sort of does is it makes all these game designers, they either end up releasing, having to add things to their game that maybe shouldn't be in their game, like clutter up the game. Or they end up having to make like a really stripped down version of their game and then hope to get the stretch goals so they can actually add the things, to their game that they've wanted all along. I just think like a more honest, simple way would be, you know, you click a button, you buy the game, knowing that there's a chance you're going to pay $75 for it, but also knowing that if like 5,000 other people like this game and click buy the game, that you're only going to end up paying $50 for it. It would still encourage people to spread the word because they would, you know, get their prices down for their copy. I don't know. It's just my idea that someone should please take and do because I don't want to do stretch goals like that. I want to just make the game I want to make, but I also don't want it to cost $112 because I don't know how to make a game that doesn't have 500 cards in it. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, man.
Nice new listener coming
thanks
in there.
Thanks for listening and thanks for calling. Jason, why don't you, sorry, Evil Jason, why don't you give your thoughts first?
Well, that idea is great. Kind of like communism is a great idea.
wow, Evil Jason bringing it on.
No. It's a really great idea, and I can tell you why it won't work. Because if you look at Kickstarter, the more successful the game is, the more successful it becomes, right? People are natural followers. People naturally want to back a winner, right? And you're going to find a lot of people who aren't going to be willing, to back when it's $75, but would be willing to back when it was $50, right? But you're spot on. As you were talking, I thought, well, the answer is stretch goals do this in a really dumb way. But the other thing I might argue is that some publishers wouldn't like this model because in the end, they make less money. And they're a business, and they're out to make money, and stretch goals help them make money. And while I hear a lot of publishers complain about stretch goals, they don't stop adding them, because guess what? It helps them make more money. But if you want to know more about, what stops you from there's this thing called the law of diffusion, innovation. And that law talks about, you've got your early adopters, and then you've got your next group and your next group. And then eventually you've got your laggards. Those are the people that come in way at the end, but you have to get the first two groups in and the start of the third group, and then it tips, right? And the problem is your early adopters are going to jump in at 75, and they're going to pay 75, and that's what's going to happen. You're not going to have anybody else jump in just so that you can pay 50, except for on those games where it's, you know, it's a IP or it's something amazing, right? But when that happens, the publisher makes less money. So on those games, the publisher needs to make more money because of the IP, because of the it being a boutique game, right? So I think it's a great idea that no one would use. Rob, how do you feel about it?
Well, so, Kickstarter was originally conceived to be something to help artists, right?
And now it just helps businesses.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it also helps artists, but it mostly helps businesses.
It was intended to help artists kind of bring their artistic dreams and silly things into reality. And then it grew into a business, basically a pre-order system. The reality of what Kickstarter is that it's a retail, store. When it works, it's an online store that lets you pre-order a product that doesn't exist yet. And you hope after you buy that thing that it will someday become a real thing that you actually will get. That's just Kickstarter, right? So you're saying, hey, somebody else should do something different. I have to agree with Jason that, you know, I don't think creators would be into that because they want to be able to predict their revenue, right?
Some would be into that.
Some would be into that.
You know who would be into that? The artists who just want to get their games made,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think now, okay. So that said, you don't have to do stretch goals, man. I mean, there have been plenty of success stories on Kickstarter, people who did very well with no stretch goals, and they were very upfront about that from the beginning. But they also worked real hard in other ways to advertise and market and get the word out about what they were doing. There are plenty of examples of that, but they're certainly not the majority. But you know, I say that to say that you don't have to do stretch goals.
Right.
You know, if I ever did a Kickstarter, I probably would not do stretch goals either because let's be honest, I'm not going to do a Kickstarter because I just don't have a head for it. And I've talked about that all the time. It's just not something that I'm interested in pursuing. But if you want 500 cards in your game, man, go for it and don't do any stretch goals. And, you know, I don't know how well you'll do, but if the game's fun, maybe it'll people see it through, see past that.
I think what's going to kill you on a game with 500 cards is the artwork.
Well, depending on what the game is. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you just have 500 of the same card, in which case, dude, you're golden. Golden.
We can do what I did with Finish It and just put text on cards.
Yeah, text on cards is big.
Nobody's ever done that
before.
Yeah, it was innovated. It was I basically invented that.
Yeah. You know, Rob, the father of text on cards.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Totally. Not just the kind of text he did, all text, really.
All text, I mean, text on
basically,
cards.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, the idea of only text, nothing but text on cards. That was all me.
It might have. The other stuff might have been you, too. I think they stole your idea.
You know. Well, I didn't patent it, though, so I don't want to get too uppity about it. You know.
Hey, we should probably wrap this up.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you, Evil Jason, for hanging out with me tonight. Hopefully,
anytime.
Normal Jason will be back next week. But you know what? I think we had a good time. So
I think
you
we
know,
did, too.
Make that, I think that dude can you know, whatever. We'll talk to him next week if he's back. Builders, thank you guys very much for listening and hanging out with us. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. That's normal, Jason. I don't think Evil Jason has a Twitter.
I don't.
No.
I wish I did.
You should.
It'd be cool if I did.
It would be cool. Maybe if you sign up for Twitter, we can give you a plug in the future on a future episode.
That'd be great.
I'm at @Pulley_design. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review where you can do that for podcasts. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG and be a cool guy like Mikey was.
Maybe you have an evil twin that could call.
Hey. I would love to hear from Lenny or Wexford's evil twin. That'd be pretty sweet. And you can buy our games. Go to thegamecrafter.com and buy all my games. And go to buildinggamepodcast.com to get a copy of Water Balloon Washout. And that's going to be all we have here. And Jason, so normal Jason failed last time when I asked him to tell a joke. But now that we have evil Jason here, I'm going to see if evil Jason can tell us a joke.
Evil Jason's not going to tell you a joke. Evil Jason's going to do what evil Jason wants to do. And that is to leave you with the words of my mentor, of the person I look up to more than anyone, and that is Dark Helmet.
Uh-huh.
That is to say that evil will always win because good is dumb.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
You're the expert. So, joke. Two atoms walk into a bar. One atom says to the other atom, "Hey, I lost my electron." The other atom says, "Sure? I'm positive."